Some questions?
Yes, I have a question.
All right.
Not a blade of grass moves without Krishna's consent. Is our capacity to surrender also granted to us in a similar way as by Krishna's will solely?
The last line?
By Krishna's will solely. Is just by
absolute Krishna's was the last word?
By Krishna's will solely. Just
solely.
By his will.
Solely.
Yes.
Oh.
Solely. Solely.
Once, in addressing the issue of a free will, whether or not it can be said that individual jiva souls truly possess free will, as you say, factor in these things, that not a blade of grass moves without the will of God, and things like that. Thinking then, and Krishna, he's omniscient, so he must know everything. Then he must know what you're going to do, know when you're going to surrender or not. So how do you really have free will? All of these kind of things. Guru Maharaj, in one instance, he gave a peculiar answer by saying, well, if you all of those things that we just said, omniscient, knowing, then does Krishna possess free will? Right? Then the same thing should apply to him. Right? He knows everything he's going to do. That's not so much fun, is it? Right? He'd never get to the point of doing anything. So, it's, you know, when Krishna and Arjuna and Gita are having their discussion about karma, which Srila Prabhupada renders as, you know, the intricacies of action. But karma and all of, you know, of what it can mean, it's interesting to note that as Krishna begins to answer, the first thing he says is to Arjuna, it's complicated. Individual karma in different stages of development, seed, sprout, blossom, fruit, collective karma, and being an individual with free will. So, while in the throes of karmic reaction, making choices, decisions that will, as ye so shall ye reap in the future. For every action, there's an equal and opposite reaction. So in the midst of that, karmic reaction, from a limited perspective or analysis, one can think, well, then it's a lot of things are predetermined, right? On the basis of what your past actions are, you can expect something to come from that, and that's true, but it's complicated, because in the midst of that, as a human being, one is capable of exercising their free will. So a certain amount of things have been determined on the basis of past choices, but still we're within a circumstance that allows for, like, maybe limited parameters, but parameters of free will, of what can be done, choice. So, but back to Guru Maharaj's point, does Krishna possess free will? Is in one sense, you know, and even more profound conception. But what we find if we examine Krishna Lila is the necessity of yoga maya. Right? We're most familiar with Mahamaya, right? That sort of illusion, deluded by the mundane. But for the full play of Krishna's pastimes, yoga maya is not, a luxury or redundant, but necessary. As we find the beginning of Charitamritam, when Krishna is revealing candidly, saying, when I descend with the Braja Gopis, by the grace of yoga maya, they will forget that I'm, omnipotent, omniscient, that I'm the supreme absolute truth, and we'll have loving exchange. And I'll forget that also. He's saying it's by the grace of yoga maya. As we told the other day, Puranic curses can be profound and indirectly blessings. When the Nisringadev Leela, the roar of Nisringadev coming out of the pillar causes a Brahmin's wife to lose their child, and that Brahmin curses whoever was responsible for this, in a future life you'll be in a stage of self-forgetfulness. So on the one hand, that appears to be a curse. On the other hand, it facilitates the pastimes of Ram Lila. If he can play the God card, then these pastimes become, they're not possible. What is the necessity if he plays the God card to, assemble an army of monkeys and bears and seek to rescue Sita? Krishna voluntarily suppressing his omnipotence and omniscience. As when Yudhisthira and Arjuna, Yudhisthira is trying to avoid telling Arjuna what Arjuna is trying to avoid hearing, that Krishna has withdrawn from this world his pastimes and entered the unmanifest. Going on, but not apparent here. And they're reflecting on how they dealt with him intimately, and he's saying, remember sometimes he would inquire from us, or he would turn to others and say, speak with such love and affection and respect. Arjuna says in the Gita, when he sees the Virat Rupa, the universal form, forgive me in the past for addressing you as my friend and being, familiar, treating you with this sort of familiarity. But what's interesting from a devotional analytical point of view is that's what Krishna prefers. He's revealing in the Charitamritam, if someone is too aware of my majestic aspect and that causes the natural flow of love and affection that their hearts are capable of, it remains concealed. I am disappointed. That's what I want. And too much awareness of this majestic aspect is preventing that. That may be a tenable position for them, but it doesn't give me much. Whereas if they treat me as an equal, how much joy that brings to my heart. And as I mentioned recently, for just a comparative analysis, we'll hear in these past times, Garuda, Krishna or Vishnu, riding on the shoulders of Garuda. And Garuda is so exalted and so happy, it's so divine and so beautiful an image. You see Garuda and you see the Lord on his shoulders and he's so noble and exalted and the pastimes are so charming. But we find out when Krishna's speaking candidly that when the cowherd boys, who they've suppressed his majestic aspect and are dealing with him as friends, as equals, when they wrestle and the losing party has to allow the victor, has to carry the victors on their shoulders. There, Krishna's in the losing party. The infinite comes under the control of the finite. It's the hallmark of devotion. And Krishna's carrying the devotee on his shoulders. And he's saying, now you're talking. That makes me happy. There are these other paths. I'm riding on the shoulders of my devotee. It's wonderful. It's beautiful. But if I can carry a devotee on my shoulders, he's the victor. I'm the loser. You can't imagine what type of joy this brings to my heart. So like the Bhagawans of this world, because Bhagawan, in a general sense, you know, is it? Aishwarya, Samagrasya, Viryasya, Yashasya, Shriya, Jnana, Vairagya, Yoschapi, Shanam Bhaga, Itigana. Opulence, beauty, wealth, knowledge, renunciation. So the famous people, fame, Yasha, Yashasya, Shriya. The famous people of this world, the wealthy famous people of this world, often complain that they can't have a relationship, a real, true, loving relationship with someone because the people are too aware of their wealth, their fame, their position. People are saying so many things to them, but they can see through this. Right? And it's disappointing to them when they find out the only reason someone was really approaching for them was because of their position, their name, their fame, their wealth. Right? And once again, they're disappointed and left hankering for some just love and affection. And what do they most often say? You know, someone who could just love me for what I am, for who I am. Not my position, my possessions, prowess, etc. It's very interesting. And Krishna's revealing that his position is like that. Mukti dadati karhichit smana bhakti yogam. Saying that some people, and they're speaking love and affection and devotion, but really they want something else. I give it to them. I easily give mukti, and they go away. So, but for those who I think really have the capacity to interact with me in love and affection, the opposite is true. If they want something that I think is harmful for them, I don't give it. Or yasyaham anugranami harishe tadanam chanai. Or take everything away from them that's acting as an impediment to the natural flow of love and affection from their hearts. So, it's a delicate matter. That we choose to deny Krishna the possibility of our love and affection. On the one hand, we could think like, why should it matter to someone who is infinite, absolute, Why would the being deprived of the love and affection in the heart of one finite being matter? From one point of view, we should say, oh, then it shouldn't matter, really. It should matter for us, but why would it matter for him? Like the first book, Search for Sri Krishna, Reality the Beautiful, later Grover said, but now, loving search for the lost servant, as we're searching for him, he's also searching for us. And we say, why? We're from this, you know, so tiny, right? There's a trillion stars in the universe, or the known, the visible world. A trillion stars, and what are we told? And there's this one planet, the Earth planet, that sustains a conscious elite, and among them, this scenario. Why should it matter? Unless, as we hear from Rupa Goswami, Krishna Bhakti Rasa, love, devotion, is such a value, even a drop of this substance is so powerful and potent, it's capable of bringing the infinite under the control of the finite. So what to speak of those who possess it and great magnitude? We're told, even the love and affection that can be within the heart of a tiny finite soul is such a valuable substance and so irresistible that all attractive Krishna is attracted to that substance that's in the heart of that devotee. And his only objection is being denied its possibility. So, the Paramatma, Supersoul, Oversoul, Overseer, Upadrastanumantacha, Bhakta Bhokta Maheshwara, Paramatmeti Chapayukto Dehesmen Purushapura. And as Paramatma, extension, it's in a neutral position, non-interfering, an observer, an overseer. Dva Suparna Sayuja Sakaya, like two birds on a tree. The tree, karmic activities. One bird is eating the fruits of those activities. The other bird is this. Sakaya means friend. Like a friend who's watching over another friend, but not interfering with their independent position. But Krishna himself is not really neutral. In the most general sense he is, but in terms of as who he is as a person, we hear in Brihad Bhagavatamritam that Gopa Kumar, when they meet, that after Krishna faints in joy and ecstasy at the return of Gopa Kumar, that Guru Maharaj said, he says in one way, how could you stay away from me for so long? He said, and in this lifetime, when I knew this is the lifetime that you will come back to me, I was, you know, restless with anticipation. So then there's a hint there that, of course, then Krishna does know. Still, how to, we sometimes, we could say, like a loving parent or an affectionate guardian, they know that some their ward, their child, has a particular talent, latent ability. They know that. And they know where it will go. But sometimes the child does things that ignore that or suppress that or hamper that. And they're still giving them love and affection and not interfering, not imposing, not pressuring them. Just remaining loving and affectionate, knowing that they have this particular potential and it's really who they are. Sometimes they're even cursing, like the patient who curses the doctor, you know, who's delivering the treatment. that can happen, even that. But still, they're just nourishing love and affection. And when they finally come to that point, the guardian may say, I knew now who you are. I knew this is who you are all along. This is your potential. It was always there. But there was something obstructing that and keeping it suppressed. That's why Guru Maharaj speaks frequently of acquired prejudice and acquired tendency. We're all about self-determination, self-discovery, self-expression. But that self that's worth discovering, determining, expressing is buried under layers of acquired prejudice and acquired tendency. Like the water, right? Bhaktivinoda Thakur's example in Jivadharma about water. When it's ice, temporarily it can be in the ice stage, and then you can give all sorts of accurate descriptions about its temperature, its solidity, its this, that, and... But actually, that's not its permanent position. It's a temporary position. So... In one place, in a purport in the Bhagavad Gita, Srila Prabhupada says that at present our, I'm paraphrasing, I forget the exact words, but he says, our natural propensity or love for Krishna has been pervertedly manifested as a lust for matter. That's why Guru Maharaj gave the example to the men about Hridrogam, heart disease, saying, when I was in the body, you know, of an elephant, I ate a jungle, and this hunger, hankering, was not satisfied. In the body of a stool-eating pig, I ate a mountain of stool, that hankering, hunger, was not satisfied. Saying, because what you're suffering from cannot be addressed, satisfied by acquisition, by acquiring, controlling, and consuming what is lower than you. He said, so what we're suffering from is Hridrogam, heart disease, the desire to consume as a means of fulfillment, as opposed to self-giving and dedication, self-offering. But Jive Swarupoi Krishnara Nityadas. That, the actual Swarup of the Jiva, is eternal servant of Krishna. So, from our present position, it's somewhat inconceivable to hold these thoughts simultaneously. Because we can say, well, the actual position of the jiva soul is sharanagata, surrendered soul. Like Guru Maharaj would sometimes say, Adam and Eve, they were sharanagata. They were surrendered souls. But then he's saying, they fell from that position. Right? Under the influence of gyan. Right? Like, Jnane Prayasam Udapasana Namateva. That otherwise they're like, we hear those examples, Sharanagati given. Monkey surrender, cat surrender. Monkey surrender are told, and we've seen in India, you were just there. Then, you know, you see the baby monkeys hold on to the mother and they're carried from one place to another. It's like God helps those who help themselves. Right? They have to hold on. But the cat surrender, the mother with her teeth picks up the kitten and carries it somewhere. Right? There's nothing coming from the kitten. So what's more meaningful to our present position is the monkey's surrender, something from our side. But we can say, for the souls who are totally Sharanagata, it's like the cat. Everything is provided for them, the Mahabhagavata. Everything is the divine will of Krishna. There's nothing that's imperfect. Everything is perfect, and if you say, not a blade of grass moves without the will of God, they're fine with that. We're sometimes objecting to the movement of the grass. They're, Trinadapi, Sunichin, it's all fine. So it depends on a perspective. And ironically, or interestingly, the actual Sharanagatas, surrendered souls, think themselves anything but. They don't think like that. They see it in others, but not in themselves. And that is an indirect, inverted way of measuring how much actual love and affection they have for Krishna. That leads them to conclude that they're never giving enough. So, Srimati Radharani, the supreme devotee, she says, I'm famous in the world for devotion to Krishna, but I'm ashamed to say that it's not true. I've not given myself fully to him. And mysteriously, therein lies the key to the devotional line, progressive line, to go deeper into the negative, culture of negativity, humility. We're always hearing from, humanistic sloganeering about being positive and the virtues of positivity. Whereas here, we're being told about the virtues of negativity. There's that one famous slogan, was it? Sakala Chariyabhai Shraddha Devir Gunagai. My dear brother, give up, talk of everything and just sing the glories of Shraddha Devi, the culture of faith that transcends in mind, intellect. We're still, trying to measure the infinite with a finite unit of measurement, using the finite as a reference point. In one sense, it's a ludicrous proposal. We will measure the infinite with all sorts of finite reference points, and most often conclude, that it's not verifiable. Right? Whereas this theistic culture, as I was sharing with Harinanda Prabhu, that flight I had with the Chinese computer scientist on his way to America, teaching postgraduate advanced computer science, one of the leading universities. And I thought, we establish a little friendship rapport? Can I ask you a question? He said, sure. I said, as a sample, can you say with absolute certainty the original source of all aroma has no olfactory capacity? And he said, well, as you have phrased this question very precisely, can I say that with absolute certainty? No, I cannot. And I said, then I don't need to ask you any more questions, because you've opened the door for theistic culture. Because I can rephrase the same question for each sense, for seeing, hearing, tasting, touching, smell, everything. So it all comes, it begins, the beginning point, according to Guru Maharaj, when the man challenged, if the finite can know the infinite and he's not infinite. No atak Sri Krishna Namadi, Nabhavye Graham Indriye. It's beyond the infinite, it's beyond verification of our mind, intelligence, senses. But if the infinite, Guru Maharaj's response, if the infinite cannot make itself known to the finite, he's not infinite. And therein lies the prospect of theistic culture. And that's an exciting prospect and possibility. He can make himself known to me. This is a whole entirely different approach. The other way, we're sitting here manufacturing things like, you know, miles, kilometers, light years. We're trying to figure out some way to measure the infinite, right? But the infinite making itself known to the finite, that is so beautiful. If that is his choice, what can obstruct that? Not even our tiny capacity, limited capacity, limited intelligence, mind, etc. So sometimes Prabhupada would remind us, like, even a child can appreciate this. It shouldn't be. Only, they'll do a sociological study. When I joined, Stilson Judah was doing sociological studies of new religious movements in America, a professor from Berkeley. So the first week I was there, we're filling out these forms. And then they're trying to conclude, so many of people in these new religious movements are Catholics, Jewish, Protestant, or from this denomination, they had this type of experience with psychedelics or not, or that. And they're trying to create a profile of who would have a tendency to find these things appealing or interesting. Not saying there's no merit there, but it's not the whole story. The Vedas, the Puranas, and they give some other ideas. Charitamritam, Brahmanda Brahmite, Kona Bhagyavan Jeev, Guru Krishna Prasadipai, Bhakti Lata Bij. What's their profile analysis? After wandering the length and breadth of the universe and through all these different life forms, a fortunate soul may come in connection with Krishna's agent. It's also a type of profiling, you can say. Bhagavad Gita, accumulating a particular level of sukriti, shraddha, faith can manifest in that person. You're an artist. I mentioned Dali, Salvador Dali. They asked, and we know he's eccentric and unpredictable in everything he did, and particularly in what he would say. Right? So someone, they said to him once, Dali, do you believe in God? And he said, yes, but I have no faith. And I thought, what an honest answer. Saying, intuitively, of course, for a certain type of person, particularly creative, all of this, to view all of this and all of its complexity, beauty, and the full sensual aspect of existence, of course. But to develop a systematic way of understanding that, the culture of faith, that has to be done in association with the faithful. Right? O come all ye faithful. Like for anything, you want to understand anything, you go to the group, the people who are cultivating that type of understanding. That's why there's art school. You may have some latent artistic talent, but you'll find you will thrive under the guidance of other artists. You may even surpass them, that's also possible. But you will definitely benefit by going to art school. Mozart had a piano teacher. Right? He didn't say like, hey, I'm Mozart. Don't let the, you know, little body, kid body fool ya. You know, I'm Mozart. Just believe me. He's saying, I don't care who you are, you know. You got to do this. Na 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 na. You know, you'll thank me later. It's something like that. So, like, in every field, you want cooking, whatever it is, you thrive by mentoring. So, what to speak of spiritual culture, where the ultimate mentor is God Himself mentoring through agency, known as sadhus, you know, saints. That word, when we think of saint, we think, oh, you mean like in Russia, the icons. I remember when the first time we went to Red Square and we wanted to go to St. Basil's Cathedral, of course. Yeah. And At the time, it said museum. There's a sign out there, it said museum. So all the people are going like into the museum. Which sounds like, it doesn't matter if everyone says, we're all atheists. You know? So officially atheistic at the time, all the people are going to the museum. You know? And it costs like 50 kopecks to get in the museum. So you have to, one thing you can be assured of, you will always have to give a donation, whoever's in charge. But inside that museum, we saw like saints everywhere. All these little saints, you know, and like, if you don't know anything about it, you can understand the saints occupy a very powerful position. That you'll come away with that. Like, in one sense, more than Jesus. I remember more saints than Jesus. Like, they're that important. And we would agree with that, actually. The agency. That Guru Maharaj said himself, when he first came, he thought, oh, you're being told, you know, you'll have a guru, an intermediary agent, you know. And he said, all right, you know, I'm new here. I'm whatever you're supposed to do, I'm ready to do that. He said, but I was thinking inside, one day my heart's inner hankering for direct connection with Krishna will be satisfied. But they're asking me to do, I follow what everyone says. He said, but in time I began to understand the Vaishnava, the agent, is everything. And that's like so hard for us to accept. That how can anything, you know, if you're trying to see and you put something in front of your eyes, it creates opacity. Yes, unless it's a lens. And in the instance of a lens, that which is difficult to see, that is remote, lacking definition, becomes nearer and clearer, precise, palpable. So Guru Maharaj introduced his conception of Shiksha Guru Parampara. Each devotee is like a lens, and then a series of lenses. And when you have that series of lenses, it's not creating opacity, but clarity. And who is the ultimate intervening agent? Srimati Radharani. And why does this become important? She's the supreme negative in this context, Krishna the supreme positive. She can extract the most Krishna. What is our capacity as finite souls to extract or to exchange? Yeah. One side, the infinite. On the other side, the finite. And now there's going to be some exchange. So the finite, by definition, has limited capacity in terms of quality and quantity. That's why Guru Maharaj says, I take my stand on common sense. Srimati Radharani is the absolute's better half, which in itself is an interesting idea. All these philosophers discussing these things. Could the Absolute have a better half? How about that? Let's talk about that for a while. Let's think about that. If the Absolute is not only personal, but beautiful, infinite beauty, and has a better half, the Absolute is all charming, all attractive, but is irresistibly drawn in attraction to his better half. Now philosophy's saturated with nectar. Right? So, and that better half is capable of extracting the highest quality and quantity of Krishna. So her serving group, that's what they're tasting. So Guru Amar said, once you've had a taste of that, all other substances become tasteless. So as Shakespeare would say, there's a method to the madness. So Guru Amar said, in time I realized, oh, the agent, that's how Krishna distributes himself. But Sharanagati, as we told, surrender. Walking on the beach in Puri, one man said, so is it possible really to connect with divinity? Yes. How? By being a surrendered soul, Sharanagata? He said, oh, I'm Sharanagata. If you tell me, jump in the ocean, I'm prepared to do that. Just give your command. He said, with pride. And Guru Amar said, that is the opposite of Sharanagati. He said, a real surrendered soul will think, I'm incapable. I'm unqualified. That makes them a receptacle for something divine. The arrogance of self-assertion, self-aggrandizement is repulsive. But negativity, and in this case, meaning like humility, attracts the positive. These currents are operating in the world. We can't deny one. Like there's only we'll emphasize the positive current. No, the world is positive and negative. There has to be recognition of the power of both. And here in this context, negativity is tantamount to humility, want, hunger, hankering, earnestness. And that is what is attractive. And that's the quality of a surrendered soul. So Radharani, voiced by Mahaprabhu, originally from her, saying, Na prema gandasti drapi me oro. I don't have a scent of the fragrance of Krishna prema, love of Krishna, what to speak of a drop of that divine substance. That's the hint of someone who's actually in possession of deep love and affection and deep realization that they it's so deep that they don't consider having wholly given themselves. They feel that that's insufficient. They're not properly reciprocating. So that puts them in a dynamic position. Sharanagati must not just a particular point where it's been achieved, nothing further. Like for Guru Maharaj, an ocean of ecstasy is not complete unless it's dynamic. And it's growing, developing. So always with surrender, with everything, growing, developing, ad infinitum, not a point of achievement in the sense of a static point of achievement. So the enlightened world we seek has a dynamic nature and character to it. And by the grace of Yogamaya and the pastimes of Krishna and this divine play, the servitors are repeatedly given opportunities to engage in wholesale self-sacrifice, which makes the infinite a plaything in their hands. But as Guru Maharaj would say, who can be entrusted with such power but someone whose their entrance have merged, their holy one? Any other question?
Maharaj, we have online question from Jai Govinda Prabhu.
All right.
He says, you mentioned that Sharanagati was the goal and not the means. Hearing that...
Where did I say that?
It's just here, Maharaj.
All right, because I think the other day I said, Guru Maharaj gives an example. He said Saraswati Thakur called this thing about where you do one thing now to get something later. He said, post-dated check. You understand post-dated check? Here's $100 payable to you, but not with today's date, but 3 months from now or a year from now. He said, it's not like that. He said, Sharanagati is cash in the hand. That's what it is. That's why it works beginning, middle, and end. It's not like, oh, you know, someone comes in connection with Krishna consciousness. And then they're it's a peculiar thing, because we could say on some level, from the beginning of the connection, people feel something substantial. That's the cash in hand, to the degree that they're surrendered. But again, we're talking about, as I just mentioned, something dynamic. So in that sense, remember, when we speak of future, we're in a world, only in the world of time and space does that make any sense. Even here, it hardly makes sense. Right? There's only the eternal present, really. Right? Like, there's the beginning of this talk, and now we're 50 minutes into it. So it's 50 minutes ago, that was the present, now it's the past. And as I'm speaking, our heads will explode. But we're living, so we live in the realm of time and space. So now and then, and that's only here. We're told when the person wakes up from the dream, then everything becomes instantly known to them. Their identity and, oh, I'm late for an appointment. That also, everything is known to them. But when you're in the dream world, you're making all sorts of other calculations. So it's a peculiar thing. I just said, a real surrendered soul, they won't think of themselves as surrendered. So in one sense, we will agree and say, yes, that's something we look forward to. Our aspiration is to become a surrendered soul. So it's not before, it didn't happen on the day we were initiated, it wasn't yesterday, or at the beginning of the... We're aspiring for that position. Yes, that's true. So we have to consider all of these things. But Guru Maharaj is saying, and he's quoting Saraswati Thakur, saying that tendency within us to offer ourselves, to give ourselves, to surrender ourselves in service to Krishna, saying that's cash in hand, not a post-dated check. He can make that determination. He's saying it's that valuable. So, and Guru Maharaj wrote the sloka in Prapana Jivanamritam in the introduction. Bhagavat bhakti tat sarvam iti utsri jividarapi kainkarjam Krishna padaika shreyatam sharanagati. He's saying, it's everything. So it's, you know, the beginning, middle, and end in that sense. Saying, by this alone, you'll get everything. By being a surrendered soul. So Krishna tells that to Arjuna Sarva dharmam parityajamam ekam sharanam braja. Sharana. Forget everything else and just take shelter of me. And that's where in some of the commentaries, that slok from the Ramayana regarding Bibhishan is given. When they're thinking, because he was formerly Ravana's brother and had a high position in the opposition, now he's joined forces with Ramachandra, but they're having some difficulties. They're thinking, maybe he's a double agent, split loyalty. And they're pressuring Ramachandra to oust Bibhishan. And that's Sakrid Prapanno, I forget it. But there's the word Prapanno, surrender. And he says, no, you don't understand. Once I accept someone, they're mine. I never release them. So we're trying to put ourselves in the position of offering ourselves, attempting surrender, so that Krishna and his agents will take possession of us, even if we become wayward along the way. So if you look at some of the other slokas, it says, happy is that servant whose master comes and drags him by the hair out of illusion. And oh, they have so much love for me. Sometimes Gurudev, people could not understand his undying loyalty to those who had taken shelter of him. And when the case of any particular person was brought up, sometimes he'd say, I will go through hell with that person, but never abandon them. And saying, so happy is the servitor who has that kind of master. Even if I fall on the path, he will come and drag me if necessary. So we want to at least attempt to get this type of connection. So Narada tells Vyas, even if it's brief or momentary, what is gained in those moments, in that brief period of time, surpasses lifetimes of mundane cultivation, however subtle, however noble. Because it's a momentary connection with reality. As Guru Maharaj said, after being asked so many questions, he said to this group of devotees, can I ask you a question? And they were all surprised. And Guru Maharaj said, what is Krishna consciousness? And there was like a silence. And they're like scrambling to think. And one person said, it's what Prabhupada taught us. And I'm like, okay. Someone else said, Krishna bhakti. And then, after someone said, it's what Prabhupada taught, then Guru Maharaj said, did he mention anything about Krishna? And someone said, Krishna bhakti. And then Guru Maharaj stopped and he said, it is not a fashion. He said, Krishna consciousness is reality, and it's in your interest to become acquainted with reality. Not like there's reality and this is what, when people have some fancy, something they pursue. Oh, when I was on the library party presenting Prabhupada's books to professors, we learned many things about how these academic departments work. So these introductory courses, like, comparative religions, the lowest man on the totem pole in the department would be assigned that because they all have some specialties or whatever. So we're trying to find out when we meet with these how much invested they are in like studying these things. So I find out from this one, he's studying some little penguin paperback, preparing for the students that are coming in September to teach them, And I was just kind of in, and I was concealing my shock. And I think this is the person who's like going to teach them about, you know, Brahma, the creator, you know, Vishnu, the maintainer, Shiva, the destroyer. Is that going to be on the test? Yeah. Anyway, so I could see this person was not really into it. Was just like, had to do it. And I said, well, what are you interested in? Anyway, perked up, smiling, and he said, folklore of the Pacific Ocean. You know, it's like, with this like being, you know, folklore of the Pacific Ocean. And then I thought later, and I'm not mocking that person, actually, I thought like, so if you can be happy and that joyful, like studying folklore of the Pacific Ocean, isn't this also like a legitimate pursuit? We'll be faulted for saying, you know, what are you into? Krishna culture. I met my ninth grade English teacher after I was unceremoniously asked not to re-enroll in that school. To put it mildly, I ran into my like favorite English teacher in downtown Red Bank, and he asked me, he said, what are you into? And I said, Krishna. And he went like, like, yeah, I could expect that. So, why did I say that? Because, what was this question? Oh, about?
Sharanagati, oh, the goal, not the mean.
Yeah, but there's some other reason I said that. Oh, about momentary connection, the value, the benefit. One devotee used to tell me, who'd come to work with me, but had been at different temples, and he was mocking himself, and he said, because he went, was at this temple, and he's actually someone who's really qualified, capable, and solid, and everything, but he was at one, then for another, then he came to be with me, and he said, you know, wherever I go, I'm always totally surrendered. He said, until I have to go. But he actually is a very surrendered soul. But it was just, you know, the wills of Krishna, we can say. But I'm saying it's an interesting paradox. The devotees never think of themselves that way. They think, in comparison to how wonderful, loving, and affectionate is Krishna, what have I given? What have I done to reciprocate that? That's the proper way to think. And that sort of humility attracts Krishna. To those sort of servitors, they're irresistible. He is always with them, always within their hearts, playing happily. Because he's drawn irresistibly to that sort of humility. Haryananda Prabhu reminded me of the superconductors of negativity. And I was at Malini's flat, right? In Novosibirsk. Was I staying in your room or someone else's room?
No, it was
Red. Oh, okay. But, you know, it's like minus 30, looking out the window. And that's when I thought about it, that the superconductors, when ceramics approach absolute zero, they have zero resistance to current, and they achieve superconductivity. Right? Whereas something like a copper wire, you know, gets hot, there's resistance. I'm not an electrician, but is Jyoti here? Anyway, he could confirm what I'm saying. Hot wire it, right? It means there's resistance to the current, makes heat, sheds heat. Superconductors go towards absolute zero, zero resistance to current. They achieve superconductivity. So it was an example to show people think, oh, negativity is a bad thing. Not in this context. Here, the humility as it approaches absolute zero means there's zero resistance to divine current. That sort of soul venting that sort of negativity becomes empowered. Divine current is flowing through them and throughout them, and we're all benefiting from it. So it's a misunderstanding to think that through the process of surrender, someone becomes weak or powerless. No, they become empowered. Like avesh. What is the meaning? Shaktavesh. Filled with this particular type of divine power. Hare Krishna.